My first guest this morning is an author, comedian and avid podcaster. She's now based in New York. Cork woman Maeve Higgins writes for the New York Times, co-hosts a weekly comedy showcase in Brooklyn, explored immigration in her podcast Maeve in America, and currently hosts a podcast with the former president Mary Robinson looking at climate change even, called Mothers of Invention. And she's home at the moment for the Mountains to the Sea Festival. First of all, good morning. And you're a busy woman. And
I know.
In the middle of all this, you found time to star in a film called Extraordinary. What's
I know.
That?
Sometimes I think it's like, it sounds good, all the stuff I'm doing. But then I'm like, but what if I was just really good at one thing? And I would just have to do that one thing.
Well, how about driving?
Yeah. Yes, you know, I got a taxi here, actually. So I still can't drive.
But you're playing?
I'm in Dunleary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're involved?
In the film that I'm in, yes. I literally play a driving instructor. And I don't know how to drive. I promise the directors... You know, when they started writing this film,
yes,
6 years ago. Now, this film is not out in Ireland. It comes out in September.
Right.
And it's a comedy. It's kind of a supernatural comedy. But my friends wrote it like 6 years ago. They started talking about it. And I said, yeah, like if you're writing a film and I'm a driving instructor, obviously I'm going to learn how to drive. Like, of course I will. That's the least I could do. Like if I'm like in a lead role in like this film. And then it kind of, I just never thought it would happen. Like, I thought it was so unlikely that this film would get made. And so that combined with just general laziness, I never learned how to drive. So then they had to get there was stand-ins and the CGI. And I think it was maybe the most expensive part of the film was to
have a stand-in for you.
I think so, yeah.
And you were the instructor. Yeah. I mean, that's the bit I love.
I know. But it looks like I can drive in a film. So I think that's almost as good as driving.
Right. Okay. I'm going to talk to you a little while about the fictional thing you're working on, the podcast coming up.
Okay.
But first,
yeah,
I want to talk to you about Maeve.
You look so serious. I love being in the studio with you because I used to always listen to the show when I lived at home.
God
bless
you.
And I still listen to the podcast sometimes. So it's just brilliant to be here and to see you with your glasses and your scarf. And you're just fantastic. Yeah.
Flattery will get you absolutely anywhere
in
the studio.
I didn't realise that I would feel starstruck, except when I actually see you doing it in person. Normally it's this kind of disembodied voice that's like telling me about it. But anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I want to talk about Maeve in America first.
Yeah.
Because on the news this morning, there was a clip of Donald Trump saying, if you don't get your act together and block these caravans that are going through Mexico, we're going to shut down the border with Mexico. And he said, trust me, I will do it. And I kind of do trust him that he would do it.
No, I think he lies all the time. And I think that he's not going to shut down the border. Not for, you know, not because he's a great humanitarian, but just for money reasons.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's such a huge trade between Mexico and the US that he's not going to do that. And that's what he cares about the most, is like the kind of economic repercussions. So, yes, he's incredibly racist and he came out hard against Mexicans when he was just campaigning for the presidency. And that's why a lot of, I think, racist Americans voted for him. But he's not going to shut the border down. No, he's going to keep doing what he's doing now, which is making life really hard for, you know, black and brown immigrants in America.
Yeah.
And he's going to keep sending them back to Mexico, which has just started in the past few weeks, even asylum seekers, which goes against international law, actually.
Yeah. You went down to the border. Tell us about that experience.
I made a podcast about immigration. There's two seasons of it and it's still online, but we started in 2015 and went up to 2017. So I kind of, every episode is like a different immigrant story. I'm obviously an immigrant myself, but I have every immigrant has a different experience. And my experience is a very lucky one because I'm white, I'm Irish. I got there, you know, I got a visa to go and live there. And, you know, the Irish are very powerful in America, as you know. So, but in my podcast, I talk to immigrants who have all different types of experiences. Part of it was I went down to, you know, Tijuana, which borders there. there's, you know, huge fences, and it's called Friendship Park, where people go. You can visit your family, but you can't touch them. You can just see them for 2 hours every Saturday and Sunday. You can see them through this fence. And like, when I say fence, it's like, it's tiny, tiny little holes. So you could, I saw a toddler there and she could put her finger through to touch her grandmother, but mainly you can just kind of speak through the fence. So that was in 2016 that I went down there, and things have gotten, you know, a lot worse. I think it's even in the news here all the time, just how South Americans are being treated by America. It's very inhumane, really.
And so can they, if you're visiting your grandmother at the wall,
yeah,
can you touch her? Can you see her?
This place, this is one of the only parks where you can actually see through. Like, this to them is wonderful. You even get to see your grandmother, or you get to see, you know, your friend or whatever, yeah, whoever you're visiting. Because often, say, if you're a DACA recipient, they're too frightened to leave and go back to Mexico, and Mexicans are not allowed into the US. These ones, like, not everybody.
Yeah.
That's kind of... They're happy to, yeah, go and do that. Like, you know, I suppose if I had any chance to see my family, even if it was through a fence, even if I had
you'd
to get a bus
it.
For hours, and even if I had to walk, you have to walk along the beach, and there's loads of guards with guns all around, and it's all timed and stuff, you know. It's very militarized, the border is, and it's only getting more so.
Well, maybe if he gets his 1 billion, which it looks like he will, and he will put in the billion, that'll give more wall. I thought it was really interesting, the different experiences, those different but similar, of the different nationalities and their experience of coming, like a woman from Haiti, people from Afghanistan. I thought the story of the man from Russia who went to Israel and then to the United States, all the cultural difficulties, the language difficulties, and yet the belief in the United States.
Yes, yeah. And I think that doesn't come from nowhere, you know, like so many people in the United States are of immigrant stock.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm from Cove. That's where Annie Moore left from. Annie Moore was 17. She was the first immigrant through the gates of Ellis Island, and she had her two little brothers with her. And she was obviously allowed in because she was the first immigrant through the gates. And not only that, she was celebrated. They were delighted with this like little white girl skipping off the boat. And now I see other girls her age, and they're stuck at the border, and they might have, you know, their little brothers with them as well.
Yeah.
And they're not allowed to reunite with their parents in the way that Annie Moore was, you know. But I think it's kind of interesting, the promise that you talk about. And I think that's in Europe too, you know, like I think it doesn't come from nowhere. Like if you're, you know, a Sudanese person, you might think, oh, I'll go to the UK. And that's maybe because you have links with England, because England used to colonize Sudan.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're just randomly choosing the country.
And similarly, India.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, a lot of the... this phrase really makes sense to me, which is like, we're here because you were there. And that makes sense to me, you know.
Right.
Like, why wouldn't you move to Ireland if you were taught by Irish nuns in the 60s and you have this kind of link? Or if, you know, your country was colonised by them, if your grandparents fought for the French or fought for the British. There's an argument to be made that they should be allowed into European countries.
Right. Right. Now, you're working at the moment with former President, President Mary Robinson.
Yeah.
Tell us about... how that evolved, and then we'll play a little
Well,
clip.
She's a huge fan of mine. And no, she's totally not. She had never heard of me. She had really not heard of podcasts. But as you know, Mary Robinson, you know, is the most informed and so passionate climate justice advocate, really, that I know. And she's huge in the climate world, and she's been doing it for 15 years. And the urgency is ramping up and up and up all the time about what are we going to do with this climate chaos that's already happening, that's getting so much worse. So she thought she might make a film to like help spread the word. And then she decided on a podcast, because podcasts, anybody can get them if you have a phone or if you're online, and they're free and they're very accessible. And then I suppose she just needed a sidekick.
And you're the sidekick.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's have a listen to the sidekick and the president.
We're talking about a feminist solution.
Yeah.
But feminist doesn't exclude men, as we know.
Yeah.
I think increasingly men like the idea of feminist progressive solutions.
Yeah, the best looking men are feminists. And I don't know which comes first.
You've noticed that, have you?
I don't know if it like makes them hotter that they're feminists or if they're just like so secure in their handsomeness.
We'll leave this now, mate. That's enough.
I'm looking for a scientific answer. She doesn't allow me to objectify men.
And rightly so.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's cool because the thing is, Mary Robinson has access as well to like all of these amazing women that we interview about like solutions for climate chaos, you know, and not that it's like, oh, here you go, here's how you do it. But it's like there's all these women who are working incredibly hard and for a really long time as well. And like Mary knows them and yeah. She like knows them and all over the world she knows them. So she has this brilliant access to this sort of hopeful strain of climate communication. And from my point of view, you know, I care a lot about immigration, obviously.
Yeah.
And I could also see the way climate was impacting immigration and how in the future, like, it's such a game changer. Like, there's, if we think, you know, oh, there's so many people on the move now, and there are, there's more people on the move now than since World War II, wait until the climate gets even worse. It's just going to be bedlam. So yeah. I was kind of frozen in this mindset of fear. And then Mary came along and we started to make this show. And it's really about, you know, well, what can you do?
Yeah. Just before I go on, a number of people have been on saying you cannot say that only racists voted for Trump because other people did as well, which is 100% true.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I think he came out, his campaign promises, he said, you know, Mexicans are rapists. He promised a Muslim ban. These are the policies that he ran on. And those are the policies that he got elected on. So I'm totally happy to say that if you vote for Trump, you're a racist.
Because I think it was on one of your podcasts. Mm-hmm. The point was, I think it was, the point was made that people who voted for Obama also voted for Trump, that there is a crossover, an inevitable crossover. So you can't kind
But just because you vote for a black man doesn't mean that you're...
Well, like, I think...
That's a really simplistic view. I'm saying
the view was that a lot of people that felt kind of cut off from success in the world, resented Obama because he was black and he was bright and he was sophisticated and they didn't like it. Now, not all of them, but some of them did. Anyway, moving on.
I think supporting a racist person is quite racist. You're complicit in that, like, they chose him and look what he's doing now to black and brown people. So I really don't have a problem. I was careful for the first few years living there. And I am kind of like, you know, oh, but economic insecurity. And the American media always kind of catch themselves out saying this. And they say things like, oh, it's racially tinged or it's... I'm like, no, look, it's racist. Like, I know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's your opinion in that sense. But
it's backed up by research as well. Like.
Sorry, but I don't accept that everybody who votes for them is a racist. Anyway, come back to what you're doing with Mary Robinson.
Yes.
And your delight in doing science along with the comedy.
Yeah, well, I think what it is with me is I'm not a scientist, but I really do like... You know, I'm so curious. I'm curious about how the world works. Why does this happen? Why does it happen to this person as opposed to this person? So I think I started co-hosting another science and pop culture podcast called Star Talk. It's a radio show and a podcast. And I think that just really opened my eyes and it really
did. And that's
did.
With some astrophysicist.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Yeah.
Well, he's not a household name. So tell us who he is.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, he is the head of the Hayden Planetarium and he's an astrophysicist, like you said, and in America, he's a household name.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's cool. Like, he's just, like, he makes sort of huge, you know, universal issues and problems, like, he makes them accessible to, like, you know, me who has never studied science. And talking to him about immigration was actually really helpful, because he takes this sort of huge view of it. And he says, like, where you draw the line is arbitrary. So I might say, like, I was born in Ireland and I have an Irish passport and I should be entitled to this and that. But, like, where did I originally come from? Like, when do I decide that that's when I get
where
to be
you
Irish?
Where you started, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So talking to scientists always helps me to understand, like, the bigger question and not get tripped up on kind of smaller things.
Right. And when you're taking those issues and when you're working with Mary Robinson as well, I mean, this has gone huge in the States. In a way, did it surprise you?
Which issues?
That is all that you're, that these blogs have gone so big and these podcasts have gone so big.
Oh, yes, in a way, because I think climate change, I think the discussion around it, it's often really negative, because that's the truth of it, right? It's this existential threat that we're all facing and that we're really in right now. But I think highlighting people who are doing something and taking action. And I've seen the conversation even in the past year really shifting. And like here in Ireland too, like, you know, we're the Europe's worst performer on climate change. But then I've been home this week and I've been following, you know, the new report that just came out with these 40 recommendations that are just brilliant. Like, it's really good news to kind of read. I was like, oh, they're so serious, and it's cross-party, and it's just... Those are reasons for hope, I think, in what can be a really kind of scary area to look at.
Right. What do you think of the youngsters coming out of school and protesting and giving evidence at the... Or giving evidence or...
Unreal, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the Irish kids. There was five of them who were talking to the Oireachtas Committee, and I was just blown away by them. And, you know, I've interviewed the American kids who go off on the school strikes. And part of me, you know, you can't disagree with what they're saying. Like, it is their future, and we're really handing them like a burning up, flooding planet. Another part of me is quite... gets upset by it, because they think, oh, they're just, it's so much anxiety that they have, and it's so hard for them to be thinking about all this, excuse me, when they should just be having a normal childhood.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like Mary Robinson always says, you're never too old to learn, and you're never too young to lead. So I look for leadership from those children, and I look, you know, I really look to them, and I really hope that we listen to them.
Yeah. Well, it's very hard not to.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
You know?
And I think that's the thing, you know, when people say, like, what can I do about the environment? What can I do about climate? Like, I'm just one person. But I think doing what they do, which is, like, shouting about it and being politically engaged and really understanding it, you know?
But then you have to bear in mind as well, in Ireland, people are scared. I mean, farmers are scared.
Yeah.
They've got Brexit to be scared about.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've got this to be scared about. Mm-hmm. So it's, you have to bring people with you.
You do. And I think that's what Mary's good at, because she talks about climate justice, which is... The justice in it is, like, say, if you're working in, you know, if you're a farmer and you're told, like, oh, well, you need to diversify. You can't just be doing beef and dairy, whatever. Well, what does that mean? What does that look like? What kind of training are you going to get? What kind of support are you going to get? Like, it has to be fair or it won't work. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what climate justice is. And there's loads of answers there. And I think, you know, that's the only way to, it has to be everybody. You know, that's the only way it's going to work.
Do you eat beef?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't feel guilty about it?
It comes back to that thing of, like, you know, how much, like, yes, you should make better personal choices. We all know that stuff. Take public transport, like, eat less meat, all that stuff. But really, I think where real energy should be focused is being politically engaged and really, like, acting up. Because one individual, grand, but you can spend 10 minutes, you know, feeling bad and everything. But the other thing you could do is really make a fuss about, well, what's our government doing? You know?
Yeah.
How are we protecting ourselves?
How's America going with it? You went there when you were very young, after your leaving.
Yes.
And you overstayed your visa. Mm-hmm. But figured because you were white, you were safe, which obviously you were.
It was true.
And how is it now? Is this the fulfillment of a dream?
I mean, I love being there, yes. I always wanted to be like a writer in New York City. And now that I'm there, I have so many more opportunities there than I have here in Ireland. And it's a really, you know, there's obviously, I don't agree with the current government that we have, but it's a really dynamic place to live, and specifically like New York City, I get to do things that I never even, you know, imagined that I would be doing.
Like?
Imagine if I said something weirdly sexual now. But that's not what I mean. I mean, I get to do things like, I suppose I get to present podcasts with Mary Robinson, which I don't think would have happened. And I get to be in a movie, and I get to meet like the most fascinating people that I've met, particularly through doing work with immigration, actually, you know. But I think Ireland obviously has, you know, a growing immigrant population too, and that's why it's cool to be home doing this festival.
Well, funnily enough, I was listening to the one yesterday where you had children, so to speak, grown-up children, talking about their parents as immigrants.
Oh, yes.
And their being the children of immigrants and what that was like. And I thought every immigrant into Ireland and their neighbours should get to hear that.
Yeah, first generation, second generation, you know, all that's happening in Ireland now too. And it's funny, the panel I'm doing this afternoon, which is about immigration, I was reading the bios, and two of the journalists that I'm speaking to, one's an Irish girl, Sarah Kapalak, she's an Irish Times journalist.
I know her. Yeah. She's been in here, yeah.
So her grandfather was a Hungarian refugee. And then the other guy, who's another person on the panel, is Daniel Trilling. And again, his grandmother was a refugee. I can't remember from where, but somewhere in Europe. And she was on the run from the Nazis. And then we have Dr. Eben Joseph, who's like a dual citizen with Ireland and Nigeria. And she has two kids here. So it is like you can see, you can kind of see ahead in America where there's more and more generations. And I mean, Mike Pence is the grandson of an Irish immigrant, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And look at the disaster he is. So I'm definitely not saying...
Well, he may not think he's a disaster.
No, he's delighted with himself. Yeah, yeah. And I really loved when Leo Varadkar was there for St. Patrick's Day. And I really, it meant a lot to me as like a member of the Irish community in America, that he kind of, the words he said when he was at the breakfast with Mike Pence with his partner, I felt really proud of Ireland then. And as well, I think it's an exciting time with the community sponsorship for refugees here, which is not in America at all, which is so shameful. But now here in Ireland, you know, you can sponsor a refugee just with five people. The community sponsorship of refugees is a huge step.
It is indeed. But we've had very good examples of dealing with immigrants, and then we've had awful stuff as well. Awful stuff. Let me read you out some of this. Marion, I don't agree with with Maeve's view on President Trump. If there's one thing about President Trump, is he has kept his word. Hi, Marion.
Did keep his word.
Look at the Supreme Court. I lived in Indiana and discovered NPR's show. Wait, don't tell me. Yeah. I still podcast. It was thrilled to recently hear Maeve on the show.
Oh, yeah, that's a great panel show that I do. And it's one of NPR's most popular. It has 5 million listeners. And
that's National Public Radio.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it's like a news quiz. It's like the serious news, but we kind of make fun of it.
Well, yeah. Absolutely agree with Maeve. I believe that latent racism is what got Donald Trump into the White House.
And sexism too, actually. I think and sexism.
Anyway, Marion, thank you for having Maeve Higgins on. She's overtaken Paula Poundstone as the funniest guest on NPR radio show. Wait, don't tell me.
I can't believe there's so many listeners here. That's cool.
And Marion, Maeve is great and refreshing. And I love how she resisted Mary Robinson and your attempts to be a stereotype feminist by using colloquial expressions like hot to describe some male feminist supporter. She sounds so intelligent and feminine. So there you go.
And I'm not even wearing my glasses.
There you go. Blush away. You started out in stand-up.
Yeah.
But you're still kind of involved in it in a different kind of a way. Tell us about that.
So I started doing stand-up, you know, here in Dublin in the Ha'penny Bridge Inn. And, you know, now where I've kind of ended up is I run a show once a week. Now, I had a monthly show with John Ronson, who's a British writer, and he lives over in New York as well. And we did a show together, and it was called I'm New Here, and it would be some comedians, but also writers and scientists, historians, like whoever really had a story about being new and about making New York their home.
Yeah.
But then after 3 years, I was like, well, I can't say I'm new anymore. So now me and two of my friends, we run a weekly show in Brooklyn, and it's just pure stand-up. So we host it. But it's cool because like it means I get to... but I get to like choose who goes on, and I get to set the tone of the evening.
You get to control it.
Yes. Which like I kind of never got to do being a stand-up, just being a normal stand-up. And right. Especially in such a kind of a male-dominated, I was always hard for me to find a space for myself. Even though there's loads of cool Irish women who do stand-up.
Do you... I mean, you've got so many strings to your bow now. Do you define yourself as a writer or a comedian?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of say what I do most of the day. Well, what I do most of the day is watch Queer Eye on Netflix. But I think like, well, how do I make my money and stuff? I don't know. I think writing is probably what I do the most. Like now that I'm contracted to the New York Times and like, you know, have Book with Penguin, that's like kind of... I suppose what I'm supposed to be doing most of the time. But a lot of the time I kind of, you know, I love podcasting. I think it's such a cool medium. And I think I'm lucky to come along at a time when podcasting, it's very democratizing, you know. And also, Marion, I'm just addicted to Instagram.
Well,
to be honest.
We've something else coming up about Instagram.
Oh, do you? Yeah. I hope it's about like how to stop being addicted to it. But anyway.
Well, actually, I suspect it might make some people addicted to it.
Yeah.
Because it's about gardening, which is a little bit away from what you're talking about. Your family live here. Is that, speaking as an immigrant?
Yeah.
The contact with family, how do you manage that?
I mean, we have a family WhatsApp group where we all sort of, you know, check in, and I have family in, you know, Dubai and in Jordan and London, and I mean, this is just my siblings. I have a really big family. So we do stay in contact, and like that, I try and reduce how much I fly now that, you know, Mayor Robinson is
watching over
me.
You.
And, you know, so if I combine it with work, like this weekend now I'm doing the Mountains to Sea Festival. So I went down to Cork to see them.
Yeah.
So I was actually in Cove, Queenstown, and now I'm in Dunleary, Kingstown.
Right, all right.
I know. It's cool. Like a Protestant version of Cove.
The connections. And what's the next on the bill? Audible commissioned you, or is it Amazon or Audible that do the
Amazon
commissioning?
Well, Amazon own Audible, I suppose, and Audible are making all these original series.
Yeah.
And so they commissioned me to write and make a series about immigration, actually. So it's fiction, which is the first time for me really writing something like that, like scripted. And so that's, I don't know when it's
premiered. I presume that's another kind of shifted skill in a way, like as opposed to being a writer and a screenwriter, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. I sound like such a little hustler. But it's been cool because I'm really into nonfiction and sort of the journalism where you have to, you know, this has to be true, especially if you're working in America now where everything is questioned and there's all this like fake stuff going around. You just have to be true to the story. And in immigration too, I'm very careful about trying to use the correct terms for things. So with the fiction, it was kind of like, oh, cool, like we can just have free reign here to tell a story and to make it dramatic and sad and have, you know, romantic stories. Although those are actually in nonfiction stories too.
Yes,
like,
they are, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, like
So will you draw on all those people you met when you were doing that? I don't mean that you rehash them,
but that
they're a source for you, resource for you.
Yeah, and I think as well, I think if you're writing another person's story, even if it's an imagined person, I think you can make, you know, it's quite a high-handed thing to do, isn't it? Like you have to be really careful. So when When we were writing it, I write it with my collaborator, Shayna Feinberg. And when we were writing the series, we had a couple of days where we had a number of people in, different immigrants, and we did a reading with them and, like, obviously paid them for their time and said, like, does this make sense to you? Like, you know, as a Mexican-American, would you say this word or would you say this word? Like, things like that, just to make it kind of accurate and also
and
more
then
realistic.
How will it come together? Will you be a participant?
Yeah, I'm acting in it as well. Of course, I wrote a role for myself. And so I'm in it as well. And it's like five, it's the story of five different immigrants in the US, and they're all against a clock. And, you know, it's quite a dramatic time in the US, like, as you know, for immigrants. And I wanted to kind of capture that and all the wild things that are happening. You know, I just read in the Times this morning a story about one of the Trump family's drivers and security men. He's, you know, Romanian national. He's been in ICE detention for 8 months. You know, like, they're gas, the way they treat people. So I love to come up with narratives that kind of, you know, go against that in any way that I, in any tiny way. Like, I'm talking about a fiction podcast here.
Right, yeah.
You know.
But, I mean, some of them have mega audiences.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Yeah, they do. And that's, you know, that's why I'm saying I'm lucky to be over there as well, to get those opportunities, to reach so many more millions of people. You know, it's really cool, like, I'm very lucky to be able to do that.
And will you stay there ad infinitum, or will you come home?
I mean, I'm pretty happy there. Yeah, I could see myself staying there. Right. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I also love Ireland. I don't know, really. Like, I'm, you know, even being home this morning now and seeing this festival, it's really asking all these, it's strangers in a strange land is the kind of theme. And just even looking at the program, it's so kind of, I don't know, it's so full of energy, it's so probing, and it's like, God, I don't know, in the US would they be even up to this, like, the kind of questions that we're asking and the writers that are working here and stuff, that kind of rigour is really, it's cool, like.
Okay, well, let me go over the details. It's at 2 o'clock, you're chairing the Strangers in a Strange Land with Sorica Pollock, and you're also there tomorrow evening when you're interviewing Sinead Gleeson on her book, Constellations.
Yeah, which I got an early copy of. I'm sure you know Sinead Gleeson. She's just so beloved here as a literary journalist. And then, I mean, she's a dark horse because I read the book then, her own writing, and I got it a few weeks ago because I was obviously chairing the panel, and I was like bawling on the subway. She's out of control, brilliant writer. So I can't wait for that.
There you go. Well, listen, I hope it all goes very well.
Thanks, Marion.
And thank you very much indeed
for
coming in.
Me.
Okay, we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/